Hello and welcome to Skip the Line, Bastion's podcast on the tactics and technologies that make great retail and dining experiences. Today on the show, we have Daryl Huff, Director of Outlets for Levy Restaurants at Winter Park. Daryl, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on today.
Thank you, Toby. It's good to be here.
Now, I'm going to start kind of simply. Tell me about Winter Park as a space and Director of Outlets. How many outlets do you operate? What do they look like?
All right. So I've been at the resort. This is my second season. I've been with Levy Restaurants for 5 years. I started at Wrigley Field in Chicago and helped to reopen the ballpark from COVID. So being short-staffed, we relied on Mastion quite a bit. So I oversaw the whole implementation of Mastion at Wrigley Field. And that was wild times, to say the least. But my operations have gotten a little smaller here at Winter Park since I moved out. But I oversee a cafeteria with 6 unique business concepts, plus a grab and go, and then 2 full service restaurants, 4 full service bars, 1 food truck, and various size catering events and pop-ups and all sorts of stuff in between.
That's a lot of variety there. For some reason, the food truck stands out to me as maybe a particular challenge in all of that. But before we get too deep into the logistics, I'd love to hear a little bit about the guests, right, at the resort. And, you know, before the call, we talked a little bit about, you know, winter and summer. So I'd love to hear, like, what do ski guests expect? And then what do your summer guests expect and how that might differ from other food service spaces?
Yeah. So we have very active clientele that come through here during the summer. They're mountain biking and hiking. And during the winter, they're skiing, snowboarding, snow biking, and all the fun winter stuff in between. But our main objective here at the resort is to get people back out on the mountain. So the cafeteria is the main outlet for that. The food truck, we try to do a lot of quick service. I don't want to say concessions, but definitely concessions-esque and quick service so we can get people something to eat really quick and get them back out for what they're really paying money for to be here. So my food truck, Bradley's Chicken Shack, we hand bread our own chicken in-house, and it's all gluten-friendly. And that is one of my personal favorites, just easy protein and pretty lean, so, and very tasty on top of all that. But yeah, our main objective is to get people some food and get them a little break and get them back out on the mountain. But we definitely still have our full service restaurant guests that want to be wined and dined and just hang out while their kids are out on the mountain or taking some ski lessons or mountain biking lessons, whatever it may be. So we have a little bit of all kinds of needs and wants from our clientele. So we have to be a little bit of everything to everyone.
Yeah, that's fantastic to recognize. Like, it is a resort, right? You have all of these different people coming with different ways that they want their day to go. Obviously, you talked about, you know, velocity being an important measure. Tell me how else, like, you know, when you're looking at success, how do you frame success and how are you measured on success in this space?
All the numbers that I'm overseeing, I would say a successful day is when we're slammed and we're pushing 20,000 plus through the cafeteria Mastions. And as long as we don't run out of everything, I'd say it's an absolute success. And we're just focused on our speed of throughput and getting guests checked out. And one of our other main objectives is to only make them wait one time. So as little we can make them wait, they don't want to wait to pay after they already waited for food, after they already waited to order. So we're just always trying to increase our throughput to get guests in and out as quickly as possible.
Awesome. And tell me also about some of the food, for example. So when you build the menu for a season, is it all the whole season at once? Do you rotate throughout? Like, how do you make those decisions? You talked a little bit about, you know, building the food truck and having that awesome chicken offering. You know, what inspires a good new offering?
Yeah. So we try to get as much feedback from our guests as possible about what they expect to see. We can kind of anticipate their needs and wants. Like I said, with the athletic types that come through that are a little more fit and looking for lighter fare than something like a big greasy burger or big slice of pizza or something like that. We still have those options for the guests that do want that. But for the most part, we're trying to gear more healthy type fare for our guests, but still have to keep in mind all of our throughput speeds and make sure that we have something that we can serve quickly. But also, we're obviously worried about our numbers and making sure that we can make money at the same time. And healthy stuff tends to be quite a bit more expensive, so we have to be as creative as possible. This only being my second season at the resort and Levy's fourth season taking over the contract. So Levy as a company is still kind of figuring out. We're getting more and more analytics every year that we're operating, but trying to figure out the different trends and try to get ahead of those and give something unique that in a ski resort, people are spending quite a bit of money just to be here. And then it takes quite a bit of money and logistics to get product up to the mountains as well. So there is a little bit of sticker shock once in a while, or maybe a little more often than once in a while from our guests, but we're always providing that hospitality and service and making them feel good about spending money with us. But we also are looking at much more sustainability, especially being in the mountains in a national forest. We want to be as eco-friendly as possible. So we're very mindful of the packaging that we use and the allergens that are in our products and all of the little ingredients anymore. I think most clients, especially the healthier active clients, are a little more in tune with what they're putting in their bodies. So we're trying to do all this healthy stuff at the same time as doing some cheaper stuff that'll really make us money and trying to figure out that perfect sales mix. I think we're not quite there yet, but we're always ready to pivot. So we'll try something new, throw it out there as a chef special or a daily special. And if it sticks, then we'll stick with it. But if it doesn't, then we'll be quick to pivot to something else.
Yeah. Do you have an example of something that you think hit that right mixture of both being super healthy and catering to your, you know, most average audience, and also was quick enough to keep velocity in the kitchen, was easy to produce?
I would have to say Bradley's Chicken Shack again has been just a big winner because it's fried chicken and French fries, and the French fries are also gluten friendly. So that being a quick fried food, but also being gluten friendly and lean protein, that has been one of our biggest wins. So trying to build off of that. But one of my objectives for this upcoming season is to try to expand that operation and have Bradley's Chicken available at other outlets instead of just the one, because it's just the food truck. So speed of service is good, but if we had more outlets open that could serve the same thing and more points of sale to bring in that revenue and capture that, I think that will be a main objective for this upcoming winter season for next year.
Awesome. You talked about, you know, being relatively new in this space. Obviously, you're taking control of a whole mountain. What advice would you give to someone who, you know, inherited your job, you know, 2 years ago? You know, what do you wish that you learned as a new kind of big site or district manager that nobody may have told you, or just was something you had to learn on your own?
Being at the ski resort, it's been a learning curve to really follow the weather as closely as possible. And I think we all know how accurate meteorologists are or are not, depending on how you want to look at that. But learning how the weather really affects our business. We'll have avalanches that close down the main pass to get up here from Denver. And last season we had the pass closed after an avalanche for, I think, 4 or 5 days. So almost an entire week where we just lost all that business, and we had perfect skiing conditions. If the pass was open, we would have made $1 million that week easily, but we just weren't able to get guests here. And so that hurt my bottom line. And that was frustrating because it's, you don't get those days back. And working through that and realizing that the pass could shut down on a whim. We don't know when the avalanches are going to happen. They're doing constant blasts and damage control, trying to mitigate any of the avalanche risks, but it's not perfect. And we still have random avalanches that occur, and you just can't really have the foresight to see that coming until you've been here a couple of years and you understand if we do get heavy snow, that is likely to happen depending on the conditions. But man, ski resorts and weather definitely entirely dictates our business. So at the end of the season, if it gets a little warm a little too early, that is also hurting us. But in the last week of the season, people are always coming up to get their last couple runs in before they're closed for the season, and you can't do it again for several months. And then we'll have random events that bring people up out of nowhere that they might not even be skiing. They might just be in town to see some music. Or we had like a craft beer fest last weekend, and we had about 11,000 skiers here during the day on the mountain, but we probably had another good 4 or 5,000 people just walking around. And those 4 or 5,000 people, although we don't see that in the numbers, we're feeling it because they're in our businesses, because they're not out enjoying the mountain. They're not out riding. They're just there to get some craft beers, check out the different tents and vendors that are out there selling unique handcrafted stuff. But then they're just hanging out, drinking beers in our business unit. So we get hit really hard on unique one-off days like that, where we have the projected skier counts and we're expecting X amount of skiers, but then something else that's randomly going on, or you get good weather, you have spring breakers that are coming from states away, just spending a week at the resort. So where we might be dead during the month of March from our Denverites that are coming up, we will still be really packed from Texans and Oklahomans that are coming up.
Yeah, that's a really good point of like, you got to, you know, especially in a destination, you have to watch the weather and you have to watch the like schedule of events, you know, what's going on nearby, what's going on just outside of the resort. That's a really important piece of advice. Moving into maybe not necessarily newbies, but like just in like dining service in general, what is an everyday operational tip you think that anybody could use from your experience?
I think my best word of advice to newer managers or people in similar positions, one being in general, just to have as many staffing issues as we have, especially a unique business that's a seasonal property such as us, you really need to rely heavily on your employees, because obviously can't do everything as one person. And playing to the strengths of your employees and cross-utilizing them. Listen to what they have to say. Listen to what they want out of their experience. A lot of our employees are J-1 visa holders. So they're here from South and Central America. We have H-2Bs, sponsorships from Jamaica and elsewhere. And they're here for differing amounts of time, but they're still here for a limited amount of time. And some return each year, but a lot don't. So to retrain those new employees and constantly cross-utilize them, checking in with them, just knowing them as individuals and seeing what they're out here for. Some may be out to enjoy the mountain, to ride their snowboard or ski as much as possible. So on days where we have avalanches and I still have employees come in, I can send them out on the mountain and they can go ride for a couple hours and then come back and close down, and we can handle the slow times in between without them. But I know staffing has been, it's just a business issue all around. So if you can get ahead of your staffing and get more out of your employees and empower them more, they will respect you more because you're showing respect and trust to them. And that has been one of my strengths as a manager, is recognizing the strengths and weaknesses of employees and recognizing their needs and wants and expectations and just playing to those. And that keeps morale high and everybody happy. So if I take good care of my employees, they will take good care of my guests and everybody's happy.
Yeah. And creating buy-in by understanding those moments, right? Is the pass is closed. Like, I know you came here to get amazing skiing in. Go take advantage of it. And then tomorrow when we're packed, because all these, you know, all these people are pissed they didn't get to come up yesterday, you're going to be in a lot better mood to service those guests. Moving into kind of the wider space. So let's leave one facility and go into two trends. Is there anything that you've noticed? And I know you've recently transitioned from, you know, from sports into the destination side of things, but are you noticing any trends in terms of like types of food that have become more popular, types of concepts and outlets that are doing better, or technologies that you think are really helpful?
We have a pretty captive audience, so we don't necessarily need to play to the trends, but that's always a good thing to do for the guest benefit and just that value that they're getting out of going somewhere so far away from anything else where it's, we have very limited food options in the ski town. We're trying to give them something special. So we have sourced a lot of grab-and-go items from local sources, and those have gotten very popular. And I mean, I'm always trying to stay on top of trends, but with the captive audience, not having to, and only being my second season, we have not stayed on top of the trends as much as we could. But that's something I definitely want to start to push, something like pickle-flavored stuff. That's gaining popularity. You see pickle-flavored stuff everywhere, or the Flamin' Hot trends. We see Flamin' Hot everything anymore. They got Flamin' Hot Funyuns and just Lay's and Doritos and all that stuff. And people do tend to like spicy. One of the big trends that we've pushed this past year, we call it a mountain style burger. And it's our special boom sauce that goes on top of a burger with fried onions and bacon. And you can upgrade your burger with that. It's similar to like In-N-Out's animal style. So something like that's a little unique, but locally sourced items has been our heaviest trend that we've been pushing. We have a unique business concept that's a full service bar. It's called Colorado Pours. And through that, we have only Colorado sourced products, Colorado spirits. We have a Mary Jane gin. We serve Mary Jane ale as well, which is actually brewed by Upslope Brewing specifically for the resort, and our Mary Jane mountainside, keeping up with those themes. And I think that has been a huge draw just for people that are coming from outside of Colorado to check that out and see what Colorado has to offer. Of course, we've got Coors and Coors Light, but that's not exactly what people are going out of their way for or coming to Colorado for.
Absolutely. Now, just to make sure I'm here, is Mary Jane just flavored, or is it actually like enhanced in a particular direction?
It's an American pale ale. So it's not, doesn't taste like snow or the mountain or anything. It's just a good American pale ale.
I gotcha. Here. Oh, man. So you already talked a little bit about Mashgin, and I really appreciate that. Are there any other technologies that you've run into that have been really useful in like on at Winter Park?
I haven't come across too many technology, cool tech trends or technology at the resort. Unfortunately, we're in the early stages of a huge renovation resort-wide that are going to pump a few hundred million into the resort in a couple years. We're probably 2 or 3 years from breaking ground on some really cool stuff that I'm not sure how much I can get into, so I won't dive down that hole, but a lot of exciting things coming for Winter Park Resort. And until then, we're squeezing as much revenue out of the existing technology, but Mashgin is probably our most cutting edge technology that we have at the resort. And I have seen the Mashgin 2.0 that I'm super excited about. I'm hoping that we invest in some new machines there. And we also, the new Mashgin 2.0. I've seen the Amazon Just Walk Out stores. Cool technology, but I like that we have someone stationed at Mashgin. And I think that the hospitality piece is never going to go away, and we need a person there. As cool as the technology is, like the Amazon Just Walk Out, there's an Amazon Go and there's another Just Walk Out, but those technologies are neat, but they take away the experience. So it's cool in theory, but it's a little dystopian when you actually do it. I remember going to an Amazon Go store in downtown Chicago, and it was neat, but it was like walking into a convenience store that is heavily loaded with security cameras, but no people. And it's just a weird future that I am not ready for yet. And I don't think a lot of people are also ready for that yet to that extent. So to still be able to utilize the tech and the benefits from it to enhance the guest experience without making it totally tech-centric, I think that is where we're at with the trend right now. And maybe later on when everyone's wearing VR headsets all the time, then that'll make more sense to have the Amazon Go stores and something that there's just totally touchless and nobody around. But I don't think we're quite there yet. I think we're at least several years away from people being comfortable with that kind of experience.
Yeah, let's move from the tech to the people, because, you know, you had some great advice earlier in terms of creating buy-in with your staff and letting them shine. I'd like to hear your thoughts on finding good staff, which I'm sure is really difficult.
Yeah, staffing at a seasonal property is always a headache. At the end of last year, we have our J1 sponsors typically for about 4 months, I want to say, from the beginning of December, when we really start to get busy. We try to open up around Halloween every year. And then we're packing the snow, trying to groom it as well as possible for the early skiers. But we don't really get too much business until closer to Christmas time. So we are a little lucky at the beginning of the year to where we don't have our J1s, and we'll manage it as needed. And we have kind of a ramp up and a ramp down where we're slowly opening all business concepts, and we won't just go 100% open at the start of the season. So we have our J1s coming from December, and then they usually leave like the middle end of March. And then we're still open for about another month till the end of April, but business is dying down. So our business needs, it all kind of works itself out. A lot of our J1s are here in the middle of college. They're in school. A lot of my employees are doing something much more spectacular with their lives than serving concessions food and working in restaurants, period. I have some that are finishing up their engineering degrees, some that are in school for law. So I definitely have to talk with them and get to know them and realize like what they're here for, that they're not here forever, and this is not that important in the grand scheme of things. So I'm trying to keep them happy and utilize all of them to their strengths, but knowing that they're here temporarily and just expecting that I will always have to train new staff members. But a lot of them are very sharp and more than willing to do everything that I'm asking of them, as long as I'm obviously keeping them happy and helping them out as well. So we utilize the J1 program pretty heavily. And then we try to source as many local residents as possible and employees, but that gets very tricky with the limited housing, the high cost of living, especially in a ski town, with all of the renovations and all the money that's going into the resort over the next several years. I don't expect the cost of living to get any cheaper. One awesome thing the resort has done is build employee housing. They built 300 rooms, I believe, and some couples can live together, but we have a staff just in food and beverage of several hundred employees. And then the rest of the mountain with the lift operations, the facilities operations, and everything in between, there's another 1,000 employees or more. So we have a lot of large departments and a lot of people that are needed to run the resort operations, but we have this limited housing. So that is an ongoing problem that the resort is constantly trying to find solutions for. They will buy properties around town, but it's just hard to get ahead of with the seasonality of the ski town and the resort. So during the summer, most of the population of the town moves away, and then they come back in November, December. But we have half the year where there's hardly anybody out here. And so that is obviously hard to balance with the housing that's available and the seasonality of it. So I don't ever foresee that not to be a problem, but the J1 sponsorships definitely help, the H2Bs, and just trying to source from as many places as possible to find employees. And it's not a great fit for everyone, especially those that live around the equator, to come up from sea level to, we're at the base around 9,000 feet above sea level. So that alone, it's a struggle to breathe and walk up flights of stairs and do the normal hustle and bustle that's demanding of a job in food and beverage. But I think we do a pretty good job of keeping everybody motivated and setting those very realistic expectations where if you don't enjoy the outdoors, especially in the wintertime, you are probably not a good fit to work here.
Yeah. In terms of like amazing program, in terms of like building housing so that people can be right there on the resort for key functions, for helping attract talent or like kind of moving them through the hiring process, do you guys offer like assistance in terms of like, hey, here are the places that you might look for a place to live and stay? So, you know, how do you progress people into the position?
We have an awesome staffing manager and HR team that reaches out to all of our employees before they start, and they do an awesome job of setting realistic expectations of moving to a ski resort and working here and living in a mountain town and the transportation issues and housing issues. They do an awesome job of giving them the realistic info that they need to make a conscious decision of whether or not this will be a good fit for them. So we rely heavy on them to set the tone and expectations early on. And then they will more than go above and beyond and help them find resources for housing. The longer you're here, the more network you have. It's much easier to find housing because you're not going to see everything that's listed on Zillow or a Facebook group page. But we do have a couple of Facebook group pages that we point our employees to, and they'll post on there what they're looking for. They have four friends. They're looking for a house with four rooms and two bathrooms, whatever. And someone will typically reply and be like, hey, I have this available for these months at this price, and just maintain those networks. And that really helps employees out. We prioritize employees coming in differently on who gets housing first, and depending on how long they're staying or how important their role is, really. But we do have quite a bit of resources to help them find something that's comfortable for them and within reason of whatever their budget is.
Yeah. And I bet setting those expectations up front has got to be pretty important in like maintaining the employee, having them stay through the entire season, because at least they understood what they were getting into. They knew when they arrived what the challenges might be, and they were able to prepare for it. So it's got to go a long way. Moving back to Mashgin, actually, you are one of our very successful clients. You talked a little bit earlier about the importance of good scanning, especially if you're going to have containers change. I'd love to hear any other Mashgin best practices you have for other people who might be adopting it for the first time or expanding, particularly in the realm of like creating customer adoption and creating employee adoption.
Yeah. So I've made my own little infographics that are posted on each machine on the backs of them. But I am also very aware that less is more, especially in regards to signage. And the more signage you have, the less likely that guests are going to be to read it. So trying to add more pictures. I love that Mashgin has the little video on the kiosk screens of how to put stuff on, spread it out, but often takes guests a little while to look right at it and understand what they're doing. There's a lot to look at, I guess, to a lot of people, and their eyes go straight to that screen. And they ignore the board, the platform with the dots on it where they're supposed to set their food, and they'll set their food over to the side. And we always have to have a line coach right there. We do have our regulars that come through, and they know how to use it because they have used it before. But we have plenty of new people that are coming in that it makes no sense to them. They're asking about the technology. So you're answering questions about how to use it and then what it is. So that obviously can slow us down a little bit, but always having a person out there to welcome people and escort them to the Mashgin machines and just kind of walk them through it for their first time. Like, set your items down, space them out, or set your tray down, and it'll automatically recognize everything and ring you up. And people are typically blown away with it, and they think it's so cool. Sometimes they'll linger after they checked out just to kind of look at the machine and goggle at it a little bit. But yeah, my best practices for introducing new clients to the Mashgin machines would be just to have someone there. You can have as much signage as you want, as simple as it can be, but you'll get plenty of people that are just totally new to it, unsure about how to go about it. They see the screen, they see the little laser scanner underneath there. They'll try to scan stuff right away, and it's a little different intuuitively than your grocery store checkout. So I think that's what throws people off, is because they are most familiar with the grocery store scanners, where you are scanning your items yourself and then putting them down instead of just placing it down on there. So yeah, less is more is my best advice, to put as many, just put simple steps and pictures near your kiosks. And you always got to have a person, because there will be somebody that won't be able to figure out, will not be willing to problem solve themselves, and you got to kind of ease them into it and just coach them along.
Yeah. At the end of the day, it's a technology that is meant to make the dining experience better and more smooth, but you're never going to get rid of the hospitality part, which is the people who are there making amazing food, people who are there making sure that guests are comfortable and understand what to do next. We're just there to help it move along its way a little bit faster.
And it can work perfectly as well. And then you'll still get someone who is a little stubborn, maybe stuck in their ways, and they'll just say that they hate technology and that's all they want to talk about. And I get it. It's taken over, but also making our lives a little easier. So can't hate that part of it, at least.
No, you can't. Well, Daryl, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate you coming on and look forward to seeing more fast-moving seasons and apparently a much more cool and beautiful Winter Park in the years ahead.
Oh, yeah. Pleasure talking with you, Toby, and I look forward to everything that's coming from Ashton.
Awesome. Thanks.